Now, the proposed public sector strike on November 24. Greg, are you in favour of it?
I certainly am, yes. I'm a public sector worker. I'm a primary school teacher. I'm in favour of all public sector workers taking strike action on the 24th of November. And what I want to see is that private sector workers as well will join with us, because what we're talking about is a strike action that's necessary to show that it's not ordinary workers that should be paying for this crisis. The wealthy should be made to pay. There are plenty of ways in which the wealthy can be made to pay, but at the moment the government is only interested in taking money out of ordinary people's pockets. I mean, I would argue that what's needed very much is that what we need to look at this from a completely different perspective. There are lots of ways in which the wealthy can be made to pay for the crisis which they caused. We could have, for example, a wealth tax. I mean, there's 1% of the Irish population owns 34% of the wealth. That means they own assets worth 100 billion. Why is the government not talking about going after that? Why are they not talking about putting a cap on all wages? Why do people need to earn the ridiculous sums? Like, there's 1,500 people in this country earning an average of 2.3 million a year. They're not being talked about going after.
Yeah, but that still won't solve the overall, you know, amount of debt. They're trying to save, what, 1.3 billion in this.
Why won't it? Well, if you put a 40% tax on the 100 billion assets that people have, that's 40 billion. Why won't it solve it? What it will do is necessary to go after the wealthy instead of taking the easy option of taking the money out of ordinary workers' pockets again, trying to set public sector worker against private sector worker. Another example, we've all heard about the Corrib gas field. The Corrib gas field alone is worth 30 billion, yet none of the money from that gas is coming back into the Irish economy. Why not take that back from Shell and the other oil companies and use that?
But Greg, while you're complaining about these other issues, you're prepared to take a day out of school. It's a Tuesday, the proposed strike day, November 24th. That's not helping get the country back on its feet either.
What will help to get the country back on its feet is when all workers, private sector and public sector, get together and stand up and say, look, there is a different way in which this financial crisis can be solved. That is, make the wealthy pay. At the moment...
But Greg, hang on. I take your point, but while you're making that point, there will be chaos in the country.
There is chaos in the country.
There'll be greater chaos on the 24th.
All of the workers who have lost their jobs, people in the last while, do you think chaos doesn't exist for them? Public sector workers whose wages have been cut to a pension levy, chaos exists for loads of people who can't afford to pay their mortgages. They're now talking about taking money out of the pocket of social welfare.
And what about the private sector workers who say, OK, you're taking a dip on your pension with the pension levy, but at least you have a job?
Well, the private sector workers and public sector workers are all on the same side here. Public sector workers having a pay cut isn't going to get one private sector worker back their job, because the problem is, again, the wealthy are left to hold on to the wealth. The small bit of money that the rest of us have has been fought over. I'll quote that figure to you again, Des. It's an important figure. 1% of the population owning 34% of the wealth. And that's 34% of the wealth isn't being talked about in terms of solving this financial crisis.
Let me bring in Alison. Hello, Alison.
Good afternoon. How are you?
You're a public service worker as well.
I am, yes. I'm a nurse.
And how do you feel about the proposed strike?
I think enough is enough, and I think we will never, never accept that working on social hours at night, weekends and bank holidays should attract no additional earnings. We will never accept that having extra qualifications to work in specialised areas should but give us a location allowance. We will never, ever take any more. We've had enough. We've already paid 7.5% this year. We pay an average of 4,000. A worker is down 4,000, whether they're public worker or private worker. Their tax rate has gone up to adding to 4,100 per annum. And, you know, when that gentleman, Greg, is talking about chaos, you know, we have a chaotic system here at the moment. We have a Dáil that's in recession from the 21st of October until the 3rd. In view of the fact that we're meant to be planning a budget to try and deal with our billions, I can't even get my head around the numbers. But suffice to say that nurses are suffering huge time already. We have had huge cuts in our man force, in our workforce. We have a recruitment embargo. We have student nurses who have been exported in their droves this season. 1,600 have graduated this year at a cost of 90,000, and we have no jobs for them. We have retired nurses not being replaced. We have at the moment the H1N1, the swine flu pandemic. It's been leveled 6th in August. We nurses are very busy training ourselves, educating ourselves to deal with the vaccine, which has only arrived last week. We have about 2,800 nurses educated to man these mass vaccination clinics. We have none of these replaced, whether it's in the hospitals or in the community or in community care settings or in care of the elderly. We have another thing that they call, the government calls, the HSE calls primary continuing care in the community, where we're meant to have exactly as it says, continuing care in the community for our public patients, for our private patients, for you, for me, for anybody who needs it. As they say, home is best.
Okay.
Numbers have been cut. Nobody there.
But these are virtual. Okay, 51551 is our text number. If everybody looks after their sector in the way you're talking about, Alison, and you certainly have grievances, but if everybody does that, it'll be chaotic.
No, but if everybody did what they were meant to do, we wouldn't have this chaos. If we had a government that was able to manage their taxes as they got them, if we had any joined-up thinking, we wouldn't have spent 90,000 educating nurses if we didn't need them.
Okay.
We wouldn't have spent 70,000 bonus for Professor Drum in 07 when he's clearly has done a wonderful job by cutting, because we have worked harder providing the service that he has cut.
Okay.
We have worked harder with less.
Okay.
To provide, to try and keep maintain standards, to try and maintain safe practice. We're barely doing safe practice.
All
We're
right.
certainly not doing best practice.
So you won't go to work on the 24th?
I think I won't go to work on the 24th.
Okay, 51551 is our text number. Pat, how do you feel about it?
Good afternoon, Des.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'm just listening to the other contributors, and as a private sector worker, I do have a considerable degree of sympathy with them. However, I think there does have to be a degree of reality introduced into the debate here. Insofar as the country is concerned, we're borrowing almost 500 million a week. If we were a customer, as we are in international markets looking for lending, we've got 33 billion, 34 billion coming in revenue, almost 60 billion going out in expenditure, and our current level of indebtedness as we speak at the moment is somewhere between 70 and 75 billion. Now, in order for us to continue to raise borrowing, we need to convince international markets of our absolute determination not to allow that to spiral out of control. So we need to really get to grips with the spending issue and the revenue. We're also looking at getting the banking system corrected at a cost somewhere in the region of 50
million. Agreed, but what about, but bring it to the strike, Pat. Is the strike a proper response in your view?
It isn't, and I'll tell you why. Because we don't want to send that signal out to international markets for two reasons. We don't want to send a signal to future investors who are going to come back when an upturn eventually comes and want to set up businesses here in this country to create further jobs. If we have a public sector that is seen to behave in this fashion, I think it sends out all the wrong signals at a time when we all need to pull together. And I'm absolutely, you know, sympathetic with the position that the two previous speakers have outlined.
Yeah.
However, the point about it is this, there is a common good to be served here, and it is only through our collective efforts as workers, both in private sector and in the public sector, that we will solve this problem. Anyone who's going to pursue a sectoral interest or pursue their own sector is going to either shove the burden somewhere else, and in this case, more likely on the private sector.
Well, when you talk about standing together, what about Greg's point about the private and public going out together, Greg?
Well, can I make a point there, Des, very quickly? I mean, while I am sympathetic, the reality in the private sector is, if it's not wage cuts, it's job losses, and that's how the market deals in the private sector with the current circumstances. In the public sector, there are guaranteed jobs. There are many, many on low wages, and I'm not disputing that for a moment, but at the end of the day, we need to all come together, almost in a civic spirit, and solve this problem.
Can I take the final, if I could, Des? Yeah.
There's no point in somebody saying, I didn't cause this crisis, or... because the private sector workers didn't cause this crisis.
Sure.
But we all have a responsibility to work together to solve it.
You know, can I come in there a minute, Des?
Okay, yeah,
Alison, here again, yeah. You know, we government has bailed out the banks, and I understand that they had to do this, but what about bailing out the beds? What about bailing out the patients? What about, you know, when you say pulling together? We're doing a hell of a lot of pulling here where I work, a hell of a lot of giving, a hell of a lot of redeploying, a hell of a lot of reinventing ourselves in other areas. You know,
but what about when Pat's... But Alison, Pat says, with your sectional interest, you're shoving the burden somewhere else. What do you say to that?
Well, we're not shoving the burden. We have already shouldered some of this burden. We have already cut 7.5% to our incomes this year. Do you know something now interesting? Wait till I tell you when you talk about pension levies and whatever. Do you know that the average nurse will retire after 27 years of service? And for that, she will be lucky to have a pension of 1,100 a month. Now, just bear that in mind. I know we don't always listen to figures. But when people say, you know, aren't you lucky and you have your job and you have your pension, the average nurse, Des, after 27 years will get 1,100 per month if she's lucky. Now, if she hasn't had contributions made, she will get the non-contributory old age pension of 206, I believe, a week. So really, there's not a whole lot more in it when you talk about our pensions and how lucky we are. You know, and when you see the waste of money, when you see this isn't the way to do it, when you see that they're talking about our fiscal policies and whatever, we're talking about trying to share the blame and trying to do this equitably and trying to have a society to live in while we're doing all of this. So probably it might be worthwhile looking at, as the ICTU and the other unions, the 24/7, have said, maybe we have to share this burden over a longer period. Maybe we can't do this all in 3 years. Maybe we have to talk about a longer time spent.
All right, let me bring in Barry. Hang on, sorry, there's other callers. Just let me bring in Barry for a second, Alison. Sorry, Barry.
Yeah, okay.
Barry, how are you?
Yeah. Good, thanks, yeah. Just listening to what I have to say, it's just madness. People are so far out of touch with reality if they think they can behave in this manner and strike. And without, you know, they're really not facing reality. The previous speaker prior to the nurse.
Greg.
Yeah, he pretty much had it in a nutshell. It's like the unions can kick and throw the rattle out of the pram and squeal all they want, but this country is bankrupt. It's literally bankrupt. We're borrowing $400 to $500 million a week. So even if the original caller, Greg, was talking about bringing in some sort of retroactive wealth tax, he mentioned a figure of $100 billion and saying tax that 40%. That's $40 billion. That'll only yield $40 billion once off, and that'll maybe fund next year's projected borrowings. So where is it? It's the cuts have to come, and people have to accept it and move on.
Greg,
why do those cuts have to come at the expense of workers and at the expense of the unemployed, and not at the expense of the wealthy? If we saw government was willing to say we'll start by tackling the wealthy, then we can talk about other issues. And it, the point that Pat was making earlier on about the civic spirit and us all pulling together, that's a really, really important point. Because if we want to build, do we live in a society or do we live in an economy? If we want to build a society that's worth living in, what we want to do is build a society that will value public service, that will value the idea of education, will value the idea of health, and will value the idea of social welfare, and they will say that all workers should be treated equally and that all workers should have a decent standard of living. Instead of that, what we have at the moment is a situation where all of the money that was made, all of the massive wealth that was made during the years of the Celtic Tiger, where is it? Somebody still has that money, and the economy has been driven to ruin, and ordinary workers have been asked to pay for it. And where and when do we draw the line? If workers continue to take the pain, which they've been asked to do, and if the wealthy continue to get away with it, at what level, how far down do we drag things before we say it's gone too far? I mean, how can anybody possibly say that it is okay to put cuts on social welfare, for example, and at the same time say it's okay for the wealthy to hold on to all their wealth?
Greg, Barry's argument is there have to be cuts going forward. You're talking about a one-off influx of wealth, but going forward there have to be cuts.
Where are the cuts at the top? There are no cuts at the top for the wealthy. There are 1,500 people in this country currently earning an average income of 2.3 million per annum.
Greg, these people cut that by
90% and they still have a huge income.
Sorry, Des.
Greg. Yeah.
Des, can I come in as well, please?
People are exceptionally skilled. People earning that kind of money generally are exceptionally skilled. They can take those talents and that ability and they can work pretty much anywhere in the world. Need people that can earn that kind of money, who have trickled down, who spend their money in the community, who maybe own a big house, who spend money on new cars. These people are all contributing to the economy through other taxes also. I'm a regular PAYE worker.
On ordinary wages are not contributing?
Yeah, but hold on. I'm a regular PAYE private sector worker, okay?
Yeah.
Now, do you think it's fair when I'm getting actual pay cuts? I'm not talking about pension contributions being taken out of my wages, but when I'm suffering actual and what I anticipate will be increased taxes in the next budget, do you think it's fair that my my burden, I should be burdened so as an elite within the public service and civil service can continue to feed their nests?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely. I've said from the start that what I want to see is public sector workers and private sector workers together, because we're all in the same boat. When you talk about an elite, you're talking about people in private sector and public sector who are earning, let's say, over 100,000 or 120,000 a year, whatever figure you want to take. Those people should be taxed. Well, why is there not an increased level of tax for people earning that sort of money? And I don't care whether they work in the public sector or the private sector. This isn't about public versus private. It's about those of us who earn ordinary wages, who struggle to get by, pay our mortgages, bring up our families, etc.
Okay.
On a day-to-day basis.
All right, 51551 it takes. Let me bring in Alison before. Alison and Anthony. Alison.
Des, again, yeah. That last gentleman, when he said, you know, sharing the burden equally, he's absolutely right. You know, we are all workers. We're all trying to pay our mortgages. I'm working with nurses who are in negative equity, who are finding it difficult to pay their mortgage repayments at the moment, and they're afraid to go on Liveline or afraid to ring anybody because they don't want the embarrassment of their friends and their families knowing that the situation, even though the country is screaming out for nurses, even though we need them more than ever. The birth rate is rising, the population is rising. The ESRI last week said that we need more GPs in the community, and we're talking about nurses and pharmacists will be able to deal with some of this. The nurses are already stretched to breaking point and unable to keep this going for much longer, you know. I mean, we need more nurses. And you know, one other thing, Des, that the HSE will not lift its embargo on recruitment even while this pandemic H1N1 level 6 is ongoing at the moment. Our HSE refuses to lift the embargo, even temporarily, so that we can employ some nurses to deal with this pandemic.
Okay, Anthony.
Hello, Des.
Hiya. How are you doing? Your response.
Yeah, my response is I'm an employer. I employ 11 people and we are in survival mode at the moment. And I just, you know, I've never in my life rang into a radio program, right? And I'm just sitting in my car here and I'm listening to the people, the first person that rang in there.
Right. Yeah.
What planet are these people on? In the private sector, people are in survival mode, right? We have a year and a half of this down. And within the next year and a half, we don't see anything on the horizon. So, I mean, you know, this letter that arrived on my doorstep yesterday afternoon from David Begg asking people to get out and march on whatever the date is, I wrote back to David Begg and sent him back that letter and told him exactly what I thought of him today.
Greg, so, I mean, you're on a different planet.
Completely on a different planet.
I'm not on any different planet. If you listen very carefully to what I've said, that we need to look at how the financial crisis is going to be solved. At the moment, all that's been talked about is taking money from ordinary workers. I agree with what Anthony, I think it was, has just said. I mean, people in the private sector, workers in the private sector, are being done over. People are losing their jobs. People are having their wages cut. But how much more wage cuts and job losses, etc., is going to solve the problem? Now, taking more jobs or wage cuts in the public sector doesn't solve it. The only way it will be solved is if we readjust and rebalance the share out of wealth in society.
And walking on the streets on the 6th of November or the 24th of November or whatever, wearing these stickers on your lapels, that's going to sort the whole problem out, yeah?
It will be sorted when the political establishment and all of us together as partakers in this society decide that we want to look at a fundamental reevaluation of the way society is run. At the moment, we're running society in the interest of a tiny, tiny number.
What about the benefits of marching, Greg?
The benefits of marching is that we do need to show that we have a civic spirit, that we're pulling together, and that we're all on the same side.
For goodness sake, one of my staff said to me this morning, right, when I went in, and I mentioned about the letter and sending it back, and one of my staff said to me, if I came in around the door to you on that day and said, or rang in that morning and said, Anthony, I'm not coming into work because I'm going marching, and she said to me, I'd love to see the reaction in your face if I said that. She said, aren't I lucky to have a job? She said, not a mind saying going out marching. I mean, it's just, I cannot even get it into my head, the mentality. I really can't, Des.
Because because no matter how many times we have said it, and the trade union movement and workers in general have said it, it hasn't been listened to. Alison referred earlier on to the pension levy and pay cuts, etc. Public sector workers and private sector workers have taken all of the pain so far, and we are going to continue to take it as long as we don't stand up for ourselves. Workers all together need to stand up for ourselves and say there is a different way. The wealthy must pay for the crisis. And it's a very, very simple message, but it's not getting through. So the only way we'll get it through is that we all down tools and say, look, who actually runs society here? Who works to create the wealth? Workers do. And the society cannot be run without us. So our wishes to have a decent society must take into account that we have the power to run society, and we are the ones that basically government has to listen to.
Marching around the streets with respect isn't going to add anything to the whole thing.
Well, if we don't march, if we just continue to allow our wages and our working conditions to be attacked and to be cut, how much more cuts are going to be imposed before? I mean, what would be an acceptable level to cut our wages to? I mean, what would be an acceptable level to cut social welfare to? If people don't complain and don't stand up and don't protest, they will just continue to cut it, because the wealthy are not suffering. The wealthy still have all the wealth. Where is all the money gone that was made during the years of the
Okay, all right. Let me bring in a younger view on this. Dan O'Neill is Vice President of the Union of Students in Ireland. Dan, how are you doing?
How's it going, Des? Thanks for having me on the show. It strikes me there, when people talk about sectional interests, they always talk about hardworking people in unions trying to stand up for themselves. But they don't talk about the sectional interests of you know, wealthy people who have massive lobbying power, or people, you know, people like the university presidents, for example, who are getting paid, you know, €250,000 a year and getting a 19% pay rise. They don't talk about the sectional interests like that.
But Dan, do you know, with respect, everyone is coming on with their own sectional interests. And I respect all of them, but everyone is talking about their own sexual interests.
I haven't talked about any sexual interest at all.
No, you haven't.
I haven't either. I'm just saying, Jez, I'm just making the point that, you know, the private sector are taking the hit here. And I know that, but
Dan talks about students. And
we're in survival mode, and we will survive. The only point I'm making is that marching on the streets is going to solve nothing.
Jez, I'll tell you, having a good, well-run public service and an efficient public service is in everybody's interest. It's not in the interest of just a certain amount of people in the country. And I think that everyone agrees that there has to be certain reforms within the public service, but it should be about review and redesign, not slash and burn, you know.
But there's an urgency, Dan, is there not? There's an urgency to get stuck into this now.
Yeah, but you don't tackle the problems by attacking the people, the hard-working nurses, the teachers who are getting paid reasonable wages now. You don't tackle the problems by cutting their wages, and also you don't tackle it by having things like staff moratoriums. You know, the student nurses leaving colleges, as one of your colleagues said earlier, at a cost of €90,000 per year. They're on the dole instead of being in places like Crumlin's Children's Hospital, sure, helping the children, costing the state €20,000 a year. Now, it'd be better to have them in there working, helping sick people, and then going out and spending their wages and helping other parts of the economy. But the government has no vision.
Okay, well, let me bring in Adrian here. 51551 is our text number. Hi, Adrian.
Hi there. I work in an office, a small private company. And basically, we're all doing the job of 2 to 3 people. The stress everybody's under is immense. The worry is, do you have a job next week or next month or next year? Where people in the civil service, I mean, I don't have a problem with them, but I think I ask the question, why should they not expect to take a cut when absolutely everybody else is?
Because, Adrian, no matter what cuts we take, it doesn't solve your problem.
It solves some of the problems. Some money will be raised. If you take all those hundreds of thousands of people working for the state, if they all take a 10% cut in salary, the same as the private workers, you will make a lot of money back.
All of the money will directly go straight to the banks in order to fund NAMA. This is the problem.
Yeah, but we're doing it anyway. It is a little bit stupid and naive to believe that we haven't got to face up to this. I've taken the cut. I'm under immense stress. I'm working morning, noon and night. And everybody else in the office is doing the same thing. Everybody is feeling the pain. Why do you think you don't have to feel the pain?
I'm not saying I don't have to feel the pain. I can start talking about the pension levy, etc. I don't particularly want
pension,
to do that.
Look, that's the future. Not, we're trying to not, deal with now.
This is not a case of whether I felt more pain than you have or you felt more pain than I have.
It's a salary cost.
We are both
same
on the same side.
As everybody else.
If you take, if you
take the salary cost the same as everybody else. That's all I suggest.
If you that doesn't solve the problem.
It will solve some of the problem. We have to deal with the problem. How are you dealing with the problem?
It doesn't solve the problem because what it doesn't do is tackle the real source of the problem, which is that the wealth is in the hands of a tiny number.
Yeah, Greg, you keep saying that
forever.
That
is not
Greg, that's all you're saying. What about sharing the burden?
Sharing is exactly the point I'm trying to make. Where the rest of us are.
Sharing the burden. I put forward my views on how the burden should be shared.
Yeah, but you can have I'm just saying, why should you not share what I have to share? I don't have any choice.
Because you're taking the pain and my taking the pain, none of that solves the actual
problem.
It
does solve. No, I'd like to think I'm doing this for a reason. I'd like to think I'm doing this for a reason. Well, I don't have a choice, so I'm hoping somebody out there is doing something decent with that money.
Do you honestly believe that the money that's been taken from your wages, the money that will be taken and has been taken from my wages, do you honestly believe that the government is using that for the betterment of society?
Well, you have to believe they're doing the right thing with it. Otherwise,
well,
we might as well all die down
right
and die.
I don't believe they're doing the right thing.
The economy needs
the
banks to get strong, does it not, Greg?
I believe that political trust of what the government is doing is wrong, because what they are doing is they are saying that ordinary workers will have to pay for this crisis. Now, ordinary workers can't pay for this. No matter how much money they take out of our wages,
but Greg,
it's not going to solve the problem, because they're not looking to fundamentally look at where the wealth in the country is and redistribute that wealth.
Listen, you have to
and
be smart about this. If you take away the opportunities for the big guys to make their money, then the whole system will collapse, because they'll just pull their money out and put it into another country that is willing to give them the better tax
breaks. What you're doing there...
So at the end of the day, you have to look at the bigger picture. You're not looking at the bigger picture.
Okay, hang on, I want to bring in Paul here. Sorry, Greg, just for a second.
Nothing.
Greg, just want to bring in Paul here. 51551, our text number. Paul, how are you?
Hi, Des, how are you doing? I'm in the private sector myself, and I just want to back up what the gentleman spoke about there, and the lady that just spoke there as well, too. I think we have a serious problem out there. We're talking about where did the wealth go? I know exactly where the wealth went. It went into benchmarking. I think that word benchmarking has been forgotten about completely. Bertie Ahern literally wrote a blank check to all the public sector unions when he was in power, because we had money and he wasted it. That's where the money went. And I can tell you another thing as well, too. We in the private sector, and I'm one of the low paid in the private sector, we don't all drive around in Mercedes-Benz cars. We didn't all clean up. We don't get all big fancy perks and bonuses. Maybe the people at the top do. But the difference is between the people at the top in the private sector and those who are at the top of the public is one big thing. The CEO of the company I work for, his wages aren't funded by the taxpayer. They're funded by the shareholder. And if the shareholder doesn't do well, he doesn't do well. He loses his job. He's gone. And at the end of the day, the public sector are going to have to wake up and realise that. Use the local shop analogy. If you run a small shop and you've got 1,000 euro going out and you've only 500 quid coming in, you're going to have to do something, and do something pretty bloody fast, because you're not going to survive in business if you've got less money coming in and more money going out. So why can't they just accept that analogy? It's quite obvious. It's in your face. You cannot pay out what you're not bringing in. It's
absolutely. But who's the day you're talking about when you talk about the public sector?
Pardon me?
Who's the day you talk about when you're talking about the public sector? Are you talking about ordinary public sector workers, as in civil servants, teachers?
Everybody,
nurses?
Everybody, yeah.
But what?
Yeah, the lowest paid public sector workers actually got huge increases. Huge increases. And in fact, if I was to tell you what I earned, you probably wouldn't believe me.
I'm sure I would, because if you've listened to what I've been saying since the start of the programme, I am very, very aware that there are huge numbers of workers in private sector and public sector workers who are struggling to get by.
Yeah, but
this is not private sector versus public sector. It's all of us, private sector and public sector.
We've paid your wages. You basically, at the end of the day, if you guys don't get what you want, you're going to go on strike, okay? Now, in order for you guys to get what you want, somebody's going to pay somewhere. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And you know who's going to pay? Do you know who's going to pay? The private sector's going to pay, because workers are going to lose their jobs at the end of the day.
Right.